There wasn't a baseball show we liked, so we made one. This is Baseball Central with Jeff Blair and Kevin Barker on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Well, as we all predicted, the Rays and Yankees, it's going to be a pitching duel. Yankees are going to have a hard time with Blake Snell. And nobody was going to score runs in the A's-Astros series because nobody was hitting. Right. It's Baseball Central with Jeff Blair and Kevin Barker. Pete Walker, pitching coach of the Blue Jays, joins us in a few minutes. Mr. Barker, your initial reaction to what we saw last night in the first two games of the ALDS. And kudos, by the way, kudos for basically hitting on every single important offensive talking point yesterday, whether it was Jose Altuve or George Springer or Giancarlo Stanton or Matt Olson. You worked some magic yesterday.
Well, listen, it doesn't take a brain surgeon to figure out what those two teams had to do offensively to score some runs. But, you know, you mentioned it, George Springer, four hits. You know, the leadoff hitter getting on base all the time, that's a big deal. Hitting when it matters with runners in scoring position, you know, the Astros did that. Carlos Correa backing his mouth up. You're going to do all the talking, you better do some swinging. And he's with the two home runs to center. You know, the nice, easy approach, staying inside the baseball, using the entire field. You know, the ball's flying in Dodger land, but who cares, right? If you stay in the big part of the field, you got power, you're barreling up baseballs, you get backspin, ball's going to go a long way. Listen, you look at the Oakland side of it, the five innings, the relievers came in, the seven relievers, that's to think that they're going to come in a game and dominate using those that many guys, you know, when it matters, yeah, that's a lot to ask. Offensively, they're going to have to do more. You know, the A's are going to have to battle a little bit more with two strikes. They're going to have to put more balls in play. They're going to have to hit home runs when it matters. That means the crooked ones. You can't hit solo ones and think you're going to beat the Astros. You know, the Astros think they have something to prove. Carlos Correa is the leader of that team all of a sudden. You're doing all the talking. They think they can beat anybody. And it's, you know, now they're starting to put up and shut up, you know, that lineup with Jose Altuve. Listen, he's stepping in the bucket still. The bat's still a little bit dragging. It's still out and around a little bit. But when you are making bad pitches to him and he's hitting them, right, that's giving him more confidence. The more confidence he has, the more balls he's going to hit hard, the better that team's going to be, right? It comes down to playing defense. Marcus Semien not making that play and then the floodgates open. You know, the A's have to stay away from that. They have to, when a teammate does make a mistake, somebody else pick them up. You know, when they're doing that, that's called playoff baseball. That was kind of fun to watch. And listen, you talked about it. I talked about it. When the Yankees have their full lineup, one through nine, they're almost unbeatable. Right. You know what? Giancarlo Stanton getting his hands extended on a, you know, I wouldn't say a hanging slider, but a slider away where he can get the hands extended. You have to crowd him. You have to throw balls in. Is that something Tampa's going to have issues with? You know, it is the Yankees now. The Yankees now, meaning that lineup, that entire lineup. Are they going to establish in early? You know, Tyler Glass now throws hard. Is he going to throw 97 in to somebody, establish in to set the tone a little bit for that lineup? That'll be an interesting thing to see. Can they hold that lineup enough to five or fewer runs? That's the thing you have to do for me. Tampa Bay is not going to score 8 to 10 runs. They're just not going to do it. In my mind, they have to hold that Yankees lineup to five or fewer runs. Can they do that? That's the two takeaways is LeMahieu leading off is unbelievable. And that lineup when the Yankees are healthy is second to none.
And, you know, one of the things we've seen during the postseason, it's not just simply a matter of scoring runs and you know, obviously winning games is important, but the way teams are set up to use their bullpens now, the more runs you score, the more you run through the other team's pitchers. And that's going to add up when you've got 5 games in 5 days. You know, we talked about, I mean, how many pitchers did the A's use yesterday in losing by what, 5 runs, whatever it was?
Yeah, they used eight. They used seven.
They used eight, and they lost. They lost by five. Like that's kind of baseball now in 2020. It's okay if you're going to match up, if you're going to use a lot of your relievers. If we hit your relievers, we're going to force you to make more moves. Yeah. Then you may want.
Well, you mentioned it, the 5 games in a row, that Aroldis Chapman with the grand slam from Stanton yesterday, that kept Aroldis Chapman out of the game. Now he can use, you know, Aaron Boone can use him 3 out of the 5 games if he has to. That's a big deal. Just giving him that little bit of a day off and you can use him, you know, in games to come. Listen, the Yankees look like the Yankees again. Oakland and the Astros, they're going to have to earn it, yeah, in my mind.
Well, and the Yankees now look genius for having Davey Garcia go in game two. You know, all of a sudden, I think it's funny, but winning one game, people are going to say, obviously, it swings the momentum in your favor.
Mm-hmm.
But I really think in that series it does, because now you've essentially bought yourself some, if you're Aaron Boone, you've bought yourself some time. You mentioned Aroldis Chapman. You've bought yourself some time, too. With Davey Garcia going, you've got Tanaka, you've given him an extra day. It just seems as if stuff's fallen in place for them.
Yeah, you want to use Tanaka in this deciding game. You know, it could be 1-1 that deciding to make it 2-1, or it's 2-0 and you're going for the win, and you got one of your best guys in Tanaka going. I think giving him the extra 6 full days of rest is a big deal. You know, that rain delay in his last start where he sat down for a long time, he got back up, he sat down again. You know, that was hard on him. It just looked like when he went out there, he didn't have his great stuff. The split, he wasn't working. The fastball didn't have late life to it. I think they wanted to give him the extra day. And somebody else for the Yankees has to step up. It can't be those two guys up front. Somebody else had to pitch one of these games. What better way to do than to put Davey between your best two guys, right? And again, it's that. You needed Gerrit Cole to go out and have a great start. Was it great? But it was good enough that, you know, they could do this and have confidence in doing it. And you know, with the lineup, the way it is now, they have enough confidence that they feel like they can run anybody out there. With the bullpen, the back end of the bullpen now seems to be rested and throwing strikes. That's a big deal. Again, it is, you know, I think the Yankees yesterday put the league on notice that they're back and they're going to be tough to beat.
There are 4 games on today. The NLDS getting going as well. Mr. Barker and myself will break that down. 590-590 is the text line. If you've got some comments or questions for Kevin, and again, follow us, subscribe to the podcast wherever you get your podcast. And as I said, we'll look ahead to the NLDS, and we'll also go to the text line as well, 590-590. It's bringing Pete Walker, Blue Jays pitching coach. He joins Kevin Barker and Jeff Blair on Baseball Central. Pete, thanks for doing this. I trust you've had a chance to exhale now a little bit, because that was quite the season we just went through.
Yeah, it was. But you know what? You guys brought me back to life just listening to you right there. That was impressive. You guys are always entertaining and to the point. Good stuff. But yeah, no, it was a crazy long year for us. Disappointed. It's we're still not playing, and you know, we got to talk about other teams in the postseason. But I think our day's coming for sure.
Mm. Now, Pete, now that you have had a couple of days at least to look back on this, what are you happiest with from 2020?
Well, I mean, we're already looking forward to next year. But looking back at this season, you know, you think of some of the good things. And obviously throughout the course of the season, a lot of young guys stepped up. A lot of young guys got their feet wet in the major leagues. Guys that you feel can be impactful players moving forward. So, you know, the experience is going to be really valuable going into next year. With decisions, and when you're looking at your roster and putting it together, you know, we have a lot of guys who have had a little bit of success at the major league level. So that helps. You know, obviously we didn't do what we wanted to do in the postseason, but you know, to get there with a young team we definitely had a few holes and I'm sure we'll do our best to fill those. But look, moving forward, I mean, feel really good about our young core players. I mean, the position players, you know, the Bichettes, the Biggios, Gurriel, Hernandez, and Rowdy Tellez, and Vladdy. I mean, these guys have the potential to be excellent, excellent major league players. And obviously the pitching staff, you know, built around Ryu, and, you know, some of these young guys stepped up. So, I mean, I'm excited about next year and the possibilities. And I really feel these players are as well. You know, the experience they gained this year, I think they're really already looking forward to next season.
Okay, Pete, I got to ask you about Robbie Ray. You know, when he came over from Arizona, the one thing was, you know, small target. Why are they giving him such a small target to throw to? And then all of a sudden he shows up here. And what do? You look at video and you say, well, just give him a big target. He has great stuff. Use a secondary, make it look like a strike, that kind of thing. Have we seen his ceiling?
Yeah. You know, he was he threw the ball a lot better than his numbers are, you know, being here, I thought. I thought his velocity ticked up, as you know. We did change his sight line a little bit and his target. Mm-hmm. Not so much side to side, but up and down. And, you know, it seemed to benefit him. But honestly, I think it was more his arm action. He became more comfortable with his old arm action. And you know, he did change in Arizona. And you're not really sure why, but he decided to change there, and it just didn't work out. So he's getting more comfortable with his stuff, his delivery, his mechanics, and it showed. The power to his fastball, the breaking stuff is outstanding, and obviously he's a big strikeout guy. So I was extremely pleased with how he pitched for us. Basically, you know, coming to us with some issues, you know, coming in from Arizona and the struggles that he had there. So we didn't really know what to expect, but we saw the upside and he performed very well. I loved being around him. Great guy. But I think he's going to take off again for sure.
Okay, so you're basically saying they've already tried to sign him and you can't wait to see him in 2021. No, I'm just kidding, because you're not the GM and that's not the calls you make. But it would be, you wouldn't be surprised if, you know, say 2 months from now that somebody gives you a call and says that they just signed Robbie Ray to a whatever kind of deal.
Yeah, no, it wouldn't. We're in a great position, you know, talking with Ross and Mark and the front office and knowing where we are financially. And I just think we're in a good position. You know, I don't know exactly. I don't have a crystal ball and can't tell exactly what's going to happen. But we do have some flexibility, and guys like him are definitely on the radar. And Robbie loves it in Toronto, you know, and I think Taiwan loves it in Toronto. So, you know, that's advantageous, you know, when you get these guys for a short amount of time, you know, so-called rental players, and all of a sudden they love it there. You hope that helps, in, you know, moving forward and potential negotiation. But, you know, these guys were big for us. And obviously any pitchers like that you'd love to have around, but I do think we'll be looking and, you know, we'll be players this off season and, you know, to help kind of fill some gaps and build around these young guys that we have. So really excited about the potential. But yeah, guys like Robbie and Taiwan, and you know, they've definitely put themselves on the map and put themselves in a good position in the offseason.
Pete, it certainly seems from a distance, at least, as if Hyunjin Ryu pretty much came as advertised. Is that the correct assessment?
No doubt. He was awesome not your normal year, as you guys know, and these guys started up, they had this, you know, pretty much stop and then get going again, and then all of a sudden you're trying to be in mid-season form in the first few weeks of the season. It just was very difficult, but Rio was great. His work ethic, his routine, rubbed off on the other guys. Obviously the position players and the team loved when he was on the mound. We knew he had a chance to win a ball game, and you know, he did everything that we could have asked for, to be honest with you. Obviously the last start didn't go as planned and as we had hoped. And he'd be the first one to tell you, you know, that he was a little disappointed in that one. So, you know, moving forward, I think it just gives him more incentive to, you know, to reach the postseason with us and to really to take off next year.
Petey, what do you think the one thing that Nate Pearson in the offseason needs to work on?
You know, obviously he was battling a little elbow soreness there for a few starts, and, you know, it really kept it to himself. But I think moving forward, he's gonna recognize those issues if they do pop up again earlier. But also, I think with him, it's really just the freedom of attacking the zone and not being fine. And I think that's for our pitchers across the board. We've had numerous talks already, and going into next year, obviously, if you look at one thing that stands out, it's walks. And what we did from that standpoint, it just doesn't make a lot of sense when we have guys who can fill the strike zone. So, you know, I think we limit our walks and he's certainly one guy that can do that. And we got to focus on that because his stuff is so darn good. Free passes hurt us this year. You know, our hits were below innings pitched and we did a great job. We have pitchers with tremendous stuff. Just trusting a little more early in the count and forcing contact, which, you know, is like an old way of thinking, but it really is. It's still evident and needed in today's game because there are just way too many walks.
Yeah, now, Petey, whenever I tried to hit, you know, I wasn't great at it, but it was whenever I saw a hard thrower who had a really good secondary, for some reason or the other, it was hard to pick him up out of the windup. Do you ever think to see Nate Pearson add a windup?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, there's always that possibility. I mean, this is something that he's been doing for a while and was comfortable getting to the big leagues doing it. So, yeah, it's something we can discuss and we will discuss. But, you know, obviously you want him to be comfortable. He looked pretty darn good in those two innings in the postseason. You know, I mean, just explosive stuff and, I mean, dominant stuff. And he was feeling great. And we knew that going into that game. So I think the biggest thing is to get him feeling great consistently. And I think the delivery will take care of itself. I mean, if he's throwing 100 miles an hour with a wipeout slider, that's pretty hard to hit.
You know, we saw a lot of and have seen a lot of and are seeing a lot of strange things in 2020 when it comes to how pitchers are used, expanded roster, of course, the shortened season, things of that nature. How weird was this? You know, as someone who pitched and as a pitching coach, how weird was it to see some of the things going on, maybe not just with your own team, but with other teams? And is there something maybe you've seen in this post or this COVID season that you think might actually carry over to next year?
Yeah, I mean, there's some possibilities. I mean, obviously, I've said it before, you have extra bodies in that bullpen. All these teams have extra bodies in the bullpen. And I know in our situation, we had some young guys who were AAA starters in our bullpen. So we tried to use them accordingly, you know, to keep them, you know, with some kind of a routine, especially early in the season when we first started up. But I think with the extra bodies, you can be more, you know, you make decisions a little bit early on your starters. You're not forced into using them and putting them in situations maybe where their numbers aren't as good. And it's kind of inevitable that something bad goes wrong. It doesn't always, but at some point it probably will. So I think we had the luxury of doing that this year, and it was beneficial to us. I mean, I think we got to the postseason basically because of how we did that. But looking at a normal 162-game schedule, you know, with five starters and you know, seven or eight relievers, it's virtually impossible to do that. Unless, again, you build your bullpen accordingly and you bring in those kind of AAA starters who can go two and three innings, you know, every 3 days. But even then, it's difficult. We ran into trouble with the amount of guys we had this year. You know, we were making moves up and down still. The amount of moves we made was probably less than previous years, but still, you know, there are times when you are short on pitching. So I don't know. I mean, those are questions that will be answered next year. You know, obviously there's innings, a lot of pitchers across baseball didn't throw the amount of innings they're accustomed to throwing. So we all wonder how that's going to affect next year. You know, some pitchers, you know, typical that, you know, throw 200 innings or throwing 50 and 60 innings. So you wonder how that'll impact them next year. And again, nobody really knows. I'm hopeful that injuries are not up next year and they're actually down. But I do think that you're seeing a slight change in how starters are used. I just don't know if it can be to the level you're seeing right now.
Petey, would you feel comfortable having Jordan Romano as your closer? Yeah, I want to say a set role, but I want to say more of a hybrid because, you know, you could lose a game in the seventh inning. You think he has the equipment, all-around equipment, to do that hybrid thing from the seventh inning on?
Yeah, I definitely think so. He can close games at the major league level. If he's healthy and feeling good and throwing like he threw this year, as you saw, he can close out any big league team and any big league game in baseball. So certainly he could. Does that mean he's going to be exclusively doing that? I don't know. I mean, I think there's just as much value in him closing out the sixth or seventh inning, and I honestly feel that way. I've been watching baseball for a long time, and I've seen a lot of games lost in the sixth and seventh inning. Mm-hmm. And you never get to use your horse in the end of a game, you know, unless you're an Aroldis Chapman, you know, some of these guys who are bona fide closers and making huge money doing that. I mean, they want saves and they're going to fight for saves because that's, you know, that's going on their Hall of Fame plaque. But a lot of the younger guys that aren't really thinking that way, they just want to be out there in the most important part of the game. And I think baseball is looking at it differently. They look at saves differently. They're looking at more high leverage situations and how guys perform in those situations. So if you're a reliever and you're closing out, you're coming in a tough situation in the sixth inning, that's viewed across baseball as being very, it puts you in a good light. Without, you know, I kind of lost my train of thought there.
The phone's ringing.
Sorry about that.
That's okay.
But I think that's a big part of it. You know, these guys understand that, and that big inning can come anywhere from the sixth inning to the ninth. Go ahead.
How tough of a conversation is that with you as a pitching coach to relate that to a to a a back of the bullpen guy that says this is best for you and it's best for the team? Yeah. Because that's not an easy conversation. Me and you both tried to play, and it's about you first, and then you think of the team. Yeah. How tough of a conversation is that for you?
It is, but you know what? I think you get more and more buy-in. It's how you approach it, how you discuss it, how it's, you know, how you kind of present it. And I think they do realize. I mean, players they're smart and they understand the direction of baseball. And I do think they're understanding that front offices are paying more for guys that can pitch in the sixth and seventh inning or high leverage situations, and they're not just looking at numbers or saves, I should say. So I think, you know, the day of the closer, I mean, they're still going to be around, you know, those guys, but I think you're going to see more and more guys, you know, group of pitchers in the bullpen that can pitch the sixth, seventh, eighth, or ninth inning, and you just kind of bounce them around. I'm not saying that's how we're going to do it, but it's nice when you have two or three guys that can fill those roles for sure.
Yeah,
makes it a lot easier on a manager.
Yeah, and you know, you made a great point in that, as both you and Kevin know from having played, it's a team sport, but you are paid based on individual performance. And one of the concerns when baseball changes the way guys are used is, you know, Ryan Yarbrough was an example. All right, what am I in arbitration? Am I a reliever? Am I a starter? And as long as front offices realize that there is an inherent value to that and a dollar value to using guys in that way, I think you're right, Pete. You're going to find younger guys who accept it and understand they're going to be rewarded for it.
No question. I couldn't agree more with that. And it is changing the landscape of baseball a little bit. I don't think it's, like I said, I think this year is a very, very strange year for a lot of reasons, but I don't think it's going to be, this year will be indicative of years to come. But I do think there'll be some changes, based off of this year that will kind of carry into next year and the years to come.
Okay, Pete, I'll put you on the spot. I know you've been watching baseball. Yeah. Who do you like to win the World Series? I know you've seen the Yankees. I know you've seen the Rays.
Yeah.
Do you like anybody in the National League you think can compete with those two teams?
Yeah, obviously the Dodgers. I mean, everybody, it's easy to say, right? But, I mean, they got pitching. They got a strong lineup. They play great defense. They're dangerous up and down. So I would say they're the team in the National League. The Marlins, I just think at some point that bubble will burst. But, they've had such an unbelievable season, but they're just so young. And, hey, it'd be a great story, that's for sure. Mm-hmm. You know, I could see us doing the same thing, but they happen to be still in the postseason. So I'd love to see them do well. But I think the Rays right now, I still think they're down one. I think they can come back in that series against the Yankees give them a run for their money. But I do think the Dodgers, like a lot of people, they just, for me, seem to be the strongest team out there.
Mm-hmm. Pete, great of you to join us. Thanks so much. Enjoy the off season. Enjoy the time with your family, and stay safe and be well.
Yeah, be safe, Petey.
You got it. Great talking to you guys. Take care.
Thanks.
Take care. That's Pete Walker, Blue Jays pitching coach on Baseball Central. A lot to unpack from that conversation, Mr. Barker. We'll do that after we step away to do some business. This is Baseball Central on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Now, that was really an interesting discussion with Pete Walker, as discussions with Pete Walker normally are, Kevin. But it was interesting hearing him talk about young pitchers and how young relievers in particular understand the concept of leverage now, and they understand the teams are willing to pay for leverage, and that teams aren't viewing saves as the sole measure of how successful you are. You know, we've seen pitchers' wins become a diminished stat over the years. I think we're going to see saves, the save stat, become a diminished statistic over the next few years as well. I think that trend has been working that way. If you're Aroldis Chapman, you're still going to record a lot of saves. But I think there's going to be a better understanding and hopefully a willingness to reward players financially for their roles in situations that aren't necessarily in the ninth.
Well, high leverage is not only in the ninth, it's from the sixth to the ninth. You know, that's when managers make their money, is what pitcher they bring in after the starter. That's when a manager makes his money, earns his money, is bringing in the right guy. Most good teams have an eighth and ninth inning guy, but it's that bridge in the gap. Jordan Romano, can he pitch mindset-wise, mechanics-wise, equipment-wise, you know, stuff-wise, to go sixth to the ninth inning? That's a lot to ask a young guy, but he's young. That's the key word, is he's young. And they've seen Tampa Bay do it. 13 different pitchers with Tampa Bay has a save. You know, Anderson is their closer, but we've seen Nick Anderson in the seventh inning because you can lose a game in the seventh inning. I think it's all about high leverage. If that high leverage the manager thinks is the seventh inning, that's when you get your best high leverage pitcher ready.
I remember hanging around the batting cage in spring training at Steinbrenner Field. This is a couple of years ago. And it was kind of, it's kind of a famous moment, if you want to call it that, in recent Blue Jays history. Reggie Jackson was down on the field and was watching the Yankees take batting practice, and he stayed around to talk to Josh Donaldson and Troy Tulowitzki, and he and Josh spoke hitting, well, for the whole batting practice when Josh wasn't swinging. And there was myself and a couple of other writers down there. So we watched this, and it's one of those great spring training moments, right, where baseball is being conducted, I guess is the best way to put it.
Yeah.
And I grabbed Reggie afterwards, didn't grab him physically, but I spoke to him afterwards, and I just said, that's, you know, quite an in-depth conversation, you know, with Josh Donaldson. And he said, you know what, I walked past our video room before spring training even started, and a couple of our minor leaguers, guys Reggie didn't know, but a couple of minor leaguers were in there watching videotape of Josh Donaldson, and they were talking about his leg kick. And Reggie said, if you want to stay current in this game, you've got to understand how to speak the language that young players are going to understand. So he said, this was an opportunity for me because I got all these young guys that I'm going to be dealing with talking about Josh Donaldson. So now I've had a chance to pick his brain. And that's kind of what Pete was saying in a way about the importance of communication and being able as a baseball guy to understand that your pitchers do understand what leverage is.
So you're saying a good salesman. That's what you have to be as a pitching coach, as a hitting coach.
Yes.
You know, this is what
works.
Would
you disagree? I got to tell you that I know what I'm talking about. And when you name drop a guy, I got to go, oh, yeah.
Yeah, now Josh Donaldson's for me a bad example because of the two parts, because of the balance, because of the timing. But I understand what he's saying, that, you know, you relate to this guy. Everybody sees what he's doing. Everybody wants to do that.
Right.
So you as a hitting coach, you as an advisor, how are you going to tell this to a young kid if you're not buying into it? And to have Josh Donaldson saying, I've had conversations with Josh, sometimes it makes your head pop off. You want to walk away and punch your head because a lot of it is very hard to understand, right? You're not going to make a living, kids, on hitting the ball on the ground. Remember that saying? That's one of those things. Well, again, you know, the flat downward swing, he has that. But because of the two-part leg kick, that's how he gets the ball in the air and pronates. So it's a little, you know, 2 plus 2 with him sometimes doesn't always equal to 4. And I'm with you, Pete. That's what, for me, separates Petey from a lot of people that I've talked to, is selling it. It's one thing of buying into it. It's another thing of selling it. Because I say this, and I say it one way, players think of themselves first. It's not team first. This is a living. People are trying to make the most money they can possibly make, and that's performance. Performance on the field. And if they're not getting performance on the field with something you're telling me, that's when it starts going away, right? That's when, you know, Robbie Ray making the big, just a bigger target. I'm not trying to change mechanically something. At first, we're just going to get you aiming at something bigger. Well, it sounds simple. Why haven't you done it before? You have to get that established player buying into it. And for me, that's what a coach's job is to get the player to buy into it, sell it, and hopefully it works. And then that person wants to be like that person. And then that person uses it, and then it works for him. And that's team-wide. And then it starts to win. And the more the team does it, the more wins you get, the better the coaches look.
590-590 is the text line. Let's shift our focus a bit to the NLDS and the ALDS. Ronald Acuna hit a home run for the Braves. They are playing the Marlins right now. 4 games on tap today. Across Major League Baseball, all of them available on the Sportsnet, on the Sportsnet television network. So let's chat a bit about what we saw. Well, we saw last night from the Yankees and Rays, and from the A's and Athletics. I know we covered that. I know we covered it initially at the start of the show. But I wanted to ask you in particular about Giancarlo Stanton and Aaron Judge. How different are they as hitters, Kevin? Or are they similar hitters from a mechanical point of view? Because they're both big guys.
Yeah.
Judge is bigger, I think. They're both big guys, but how would you describe their swings?
Well, I think they're, you know, the, I think their setup is obviously the looks, the way it just looks when you first see it, because Stanton's got the cutoff swing, you know, the cutoff stance. He wants to keep the front side in, you know, getting hit in the face is a big deal. You have to get past that. The way he did was cut himself off, and it's more about direction. Okay, if I start here, I want to end here. I don't want to have front side pull. I don't want to start opening up with my shoulder. I want to keep it in that direction. That's what I said. It's going to be very interesting tonight to see if Tampa Bay can establish in, because how do you get them out? For me, big guys want to get their arms extended. You know, you saw Judge on the breaking ball. He hit the breaking ball because he gets the arms extended. Now, he does have a little bit of a shorter swing than Stanton does, so it will be, you know, you're going to have to be real good in there. You got to get it in there, and if you miss, it's got to be in off the plate, because he can't inside out a ball and hit a home run. But right. It's for me, Tampa's got to establish in and expand with a secondary pitch. The two guys are really similar because they can go line to line. Doesn't matter the park. That's the big thing is I'm not changing anything. But just because I'm playing on the road, the park's bigger. Yankee Stadium's got the short porch and right, and I like it there, and that's why I'm trying to go over there a lot. It doesn't matter. You're so big, they hit the ball so hard, line to line. It's like Stanton hit the home run, the 2-2 slider or cutter thing that he hit because he got his arms extended. I looked at my wife and said, I hit 270-plus homers. I never hit a home run to center and knew as soon as I hit it that it's gone. That is manpower. Like, that is power that's, you know, beyond power. It is, you know, when you hit it, you know it kind of thing. And this is what, for me, separates this lineup from everybody else is you have to be fine. That pitcher almost has to be perfect 1 through 9. When you're seeing the 8 and 9 hitter hitting homers off of one of your best pitchers, that means it's going to be a long night for you. So it's, again, they're going to have to make good pitches. They're going to have to play good defense. If they do that, again, it's going to be some closer games. But I still like the Yankees because of their lineup.
590-590 is the text line. Please include your name and your location in the text line. A little bit of news to get you caught up on. Starling Marte has not been added to the Miami Marlins roster for their NLDS series against Atlanta. He, of course, fractured his hand. I believe it was the first inning of the first game against the Cubs. He fractured his hand. There was some thought that he might be added to the roster. He is not on the roster. That's not good news for the Marlins. Nope. They need all the help they can get.
Yep.
And Mike Clevinger will start game one for the San Diego Padres. That is very good news. The Padres' top two starters, Mike Clevinger and Dennelson Lamet, both injured. Lamet is not on the roster for the NLDS. There is a chance, should the Padres advance, that he will be in the NLCS roster. But Kevin, I got to tell you, if the Padres didn't have Mike Clevinger, as much as I love that lineup, if the Padres didn't have Mike Clevinger, there's a chance that we could have been looking at a sweep in that series.
Yeah, maybe. I'm not real sure what Clevinger's going to give you. I know he got the cortisone shot in his elbow. I know he had the max effort bullpen.
But it's better than Craig Stammen. I mean, sure, it's better than what you were going to get.
I guess appearance-wise, knowing that he's on the mound, you know, what's he going to give you? He's a max effort guy. Look for bouncing the breaking ball in front of the plate. He knows who he's facing. You know, Mookie Betts right out the gate is going to try and punch you. He's going to try and knock you out right out the gate. How's that at bat going to get? You know, is he going to overthrow secondary pitches? Is the fastball going to be non-competitive pitches? You know, that's another thing. Can Tatis Jr. not want to be Mookie Betts? That's the thing. You know, you get a really good young player on the other side playing against a really, really good player on the other side. That guy wants to outdo the other guy. You know, can Tatis Jr. just separate it and say, I'm going to be myself. I'm going to go up and have the best approach I can have. I'm going to compete with two strikes, and I'm going to play great defense and use off my strong arm. I'm going to go first to third when I'm on bases and not worry about Mookie Betts and what he does. So that'll be interesting. You know, when I was young, what did you do when you were young, Jeff? You tried too hard. So if those young guys can just stop trying so hard and let the game come to them and not chase the game, Padres will make this a series. It's not going to be blowouts.
This is a question from Joey in Port Colborne. And I figured at some point we'd be dealing with this. Hey, guys. So if the Astros end up winning it this year, Does it mean the cheating thing is washed? I think they're mutually exclusive. They're cheaters, but they're also a good baseball team as well. I just keep hearing the talking heads saying they need to win this year to dampen the scandal. The scandal shouldn't be dampened at all, regardless if they win the next five World Series. Joey in Port Colborne.
Yeah, I'm with Joey.
I'm with Joey, but I will say this. I will say this. If the Houston Astros can make it to the World Series, it doesn't dampen the scandal because they still cheated, but I think it will force people to view the Astros a little differently. I'll flip that on its head. If the Astros were boat raced in this series by the Oakland Athletics, just crushed by the Oakland Athletics, and Alex Bregman was hitting what he was hitting, and Jose Altuve was doing what he was doing, and Carlos Correa was doing what he was doing, then I think a lot of people would look at the Astros and go, see, they can't win when they don't cheat.
So you're
probably unfair.
Yeah,
probably unfair.
You're saying baseball is a very individual sport because, to say a Springer can't hit a fastball or he's swinging erratically at a breaking ball that's not even close. Jose Altuve is doing the same kind of thing. Alex Bregman, who's had issues with the breaking ball, who hit a home run yesterday. I was thinking the first thing that everybody else was thinking, did he know it was coming? But it was a really bad breaking ball. So, you know, you give him a little bit of credit because he got the foot down a little bit early. But I'm with you. It's those how does the at-bats look? That's I think what people are honed in on is it's very individual with every one of these Astros hitters. It's not a team thing. I'm rooting for Dusty Baker. I'm a huge fan of Dusty Baker's. I want him to win the World Series, but do I really? That's the thing. Do I really want to see Carlos Correa sitting at a microphone saying, "I told you guys so," you know, and how he's been talking to the media lately. So it is there's a fine line there, right?
A lot of how we view this. If the Astros do, in fact, go on to the World Series, or even the ALCS, a lot of it will depend on how they handle the questions about this. A lot of it will depend on whether or not there is a certain amount of humbleness. I don't know if that's the right word, humility, whether or not there's a certain amount of humility, whether or not there is any hint at all that the players realize that other people think they did something wrong. Yeah. We can all justify lies. As human beings, we have no problem justifying lies. It's one of the things we do really well. But what the Astros have to do is understand why people feel the way they feel about them. And if they can pull that off, because let's be clear, one of the things the pandemic did is it removed from the Astros a lot of the questions, a lot of the pressure of having to answer questions they would have had to answer if this had been a regular season.
Yeah, what if there were fans?
Every game.
Fans and they had to go to Oakland? Are
exactly.
You kidding me?
Exactly.
Wow.
It removed them from having to answer to the fans.
Yeah.
It removed them from having to answer to the media, because you know that every city the Astros went to, it doesn't matter what time of year it was, what was going to be the tone of discussion, the tone of the churn surrounding the media discussion of the team. Well, it was going to be cheating. So I think there is a sense that the Astros players got off easy. There's a sense that at this point that they view this as kind of a chip on their shoulder. If they can somehow figure out how to conduct themselves in these Zoom calls, as I said, with a certain amount of humility, with an understanding of why people think the way they think about them, and if they can allow their manager, Dusty Baker, to dampen some of that. Because, look, we've all been around Dusty.
Yep.
You've got to have a serious problem as a human being if you don't like Dusty.
Very zen.
And if Dusty looks into the camera at these Zoom calls and helps sort of smooth out those hard feelings, because everybody on those Zoom calls, every member of the national media loves Dusty because we've all dealt with him one-on-one at some point.
Yeah.
We've all had the benefit of hearing him talk to us one-on-one. There are people in sports that just that engender a one-to-one emotional attachment, even if you've only met them once. And Dusty is very, very much that guy.
Yeah, I
think there's a way forward here.
This is just me speaking. I can't have, if say they do win this series and go to the ALCS, I can't have Carlos Correa pointing finger in a Zoom call and saying, "We told you so." We cannot have that. Like, that's, and I don't think we'll have that because of who their manager is. I think Dusty Baker is going to have the conversation and say, "Be humble. We earned the right to be picked at and yelled at. And, you know, said the things about that what we done was wrong and those kind of things. All we can do is zip it, go out there and beat people 10-5. If they continue to do this and their lineup 1-5 is doing what they're doing, listen, you know, it would be hard to have bad conversations about them because they are laying off the breaking balls they should, hitting the fastballs they should, playing defense the way they should, winning games that they're supposed to win. What are you going to talk about?
And they are doing it without their ace.
Yep.
And with a Zach Greinke who does not appear to be the same Zach Greinke we saw last year. So there is an element of this here. If the Astros do go on, you can make the case that they've overachieved based on their pitching. You can make the case that they've overachieved.
Yeah,
now, I'm not saying pity the Astros,
yeah,
but you can make that case.
Perfect.
Let's take a break.
Of the 60 games and the no fans, that's what's helped them the most.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Because all they've had to focus on is baseball.
Yep.
Let's take a break. Come back. Go back to the text line 590-590. It's Baseball Central on Sportsnet 590. The Fan. The LA Dodgers have made a couple of moves to their roster ahead of their NLDS against the Padres. Gavin Lux, who really struggled this year, one of their top prospects, has been added to the roster. So has Dylan Floro, a right-handed reliever. And we'll talk in a few minutes about the Dodgers relievers. Some interesting stuff going on there. Edwin Rios and third-string catcher Keibert Ruiz will not be on the roster for the NLDS. This, of course, is a team's sort of line. Get their ducks lined up ahead of the games today. 590-590 is the text line. Got an interesting question here, Kevin.
Mm-hmm.
The first one with the Max in East York wants to know about DJ LeMahieu and the Jays. Wouldn't he be a fantastic bat for the Jays? Yeah, he would. Unfortunately, the Yankees view him as pretty much irreplaceable right now. So DJ LeMahieu is going to be that. He's going to be the guy the Yankees pay a lot of money to this offseason.
Yeah, I would think with the health issues they have with Stanton and Judge, you know, a lot of the times they're not playing. They need that constant guy that is in the lineup all the time who can drive in runs and get tons of hits. And me, I think they're going to overpay for him.
I think you're right.
Yeah.
Drew and Barry, assuming the Jays play in Buffalo next season, which I don't know if we can do that yet, but I'm willing to work with you on this, Drew.
Sure.
Assuming the Jays play in Buffalo next season, will that land them one-year contracts like Trevor Bauer since they will not have to come to Canada? There's a couple of aspects to this. Understanding we don't know what the international border will look like next season, although I have to think the border will be open. If the border is not open next spring, you may not having baseball may be the last whether or not you have baseball may be the last of your worries if the border isn't open next spring. So I'm operating under the assumption the border was over will be open. Look, Trevor Bauer, we got to talk about this 1 year contract thing. First of all, Trevor Bauer walked that back as soon as Mookie Betts signed with the Dodgers and was off the free agent market. There is no free agent out there, I don't think, this year who will get paid to the degree Trevor Bauer will get paid. There's certainly no free agent pitcher. So if somebody comes along and gives Trevor Bauer 3 years at $100 million, Trevor Bauer is not going to say, nope, I don't want the three-year contract. I want 1 year. Trust me.
Yeah.
So let's leave that aside. And with Trevor Bauer, he's a different cat, But David Price was a different cat as well, right?
Yeah.
And you know what David Price did, Kevin? He went where the money and the term was.
Yeah. That's
what Trevor Bauer's
doing. Yeah, he'll do that.
It's got no idea. Doesn't matter whether the Jays play in Buffalo, Toronto, Mars, or wherever.
I kind of disagree a little bit. I think with what Buffalo showed is the ball flies line to line there. If you're a pitcher and you care about numbers, you know, not wanting to give up home runs, Trevor Bauer's a spinner. He's a spinner first guy, elevating the heater. You know, the ball will travel there. You know, you cannot hit a ball solid and still hit a home run if you're a right-handed hitter to right field. That may be one thing. You know, that just tells me that the Blue Jays may have to pay a little bit more. They had to do that anyway to get him to Canada. But, you know, that might be a thing where you may have to add either another year or a couple more million bucks. But that's the way it was going to be anyway. He will go to the highest bidder. End of story.
Yep.
Yep.
What are the Jays' biggest need? This is from Chris in London. The Jays' biggest need in the offseason, should they sign Walker and Ray to starting pitching? I mean, I've been under the impression, Kevin, and I know you are too, that the Jays are really talking to Ray.
Yep.
3 years and $45 million. That's the number we're hearing. That's the number that was actually out there at the end of the season. A lot of people were guesstimating that. Look, I think the Jays, I think the Jays are going to move very quickly in Ray and Walker. I think we'll know very quickly whether or not they're going to be back next year. And if they're not, then the Jays will have to pivot to something else.
Somebody's got to drive in runs. I think they got to have a middle of the order bat, whoever that is, Marcell Ozuna. I mean, you name it, JT Realmuto, whatever. You solve sort of both problems there, but. Look, I think they need
George
that
Springer
one.
Would be the perfect.
There you, there you go. Well, he's you Never know he won't DJ be the middle order guy, but he'll be your leadoff hitter, that kind of thing. So it is,
and he'll catch the ball.
He'll drive in runs too. You get the best of both worlds.
Very quickly, as we look ahead to the NLDS, the Padres and Dodgers, it's going to be an interesting time for the Dodgers bullpen because Kenley Jansen. Well, you noted Kenley. Well. Talk to us what you've noticed about Kenley Jansen. And we've also seen Dave Roberts. We saw in the last series use Kenley Jansen earlier in the game and actually use Brezdar Graterol to close things out. I think we're going to see Dave Roberts use Kenley Jansen differently than we have in any other
postseason. If they want to win a World Series, you better. The cutter's 88 miles an hour. That's not going to get it done. We just had Petey on here being a salesman. How will Dave Roberts sell that to Kenley Jansen? That's the key is, can you bring him in a room and say what's best for the team? Not for you. What's best for the team with the way you're throwing right now is for you not to be pitching in the ninth inning. How will that go, Jeff?
I think knowing what we know about Kenley Jansen, I think it'll be okay.
Well, are you tired of losing? That's what I'm thinking. It's all about winning.
That would be part of my sales pitch. Keep an eye tonight, by the way, on Walker Buehler, Dodgers game one starter. He has got an atrocious blister on his right index finger. That will certainly be a storyline to monitor tonight as the Dodgers and Padres play. That is it for us. We will be back tomorrow. Lovely mask, Mr. Barker. We'll be back tomorrow. Enjoy the baseball. Writer's block is next.